Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler. Great to be back with you once again. And this is episode number 43. podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is the email address if you want to get in touch with us. We love to hear from you with any comments or suggestions. Or if you've got something to say and you want to come on the podcast and chat to us, then we'd love to hear about that too. Now, coming up today, I'm delighted to be catching up with someone that actually I haven't spoken to in quite a while. That's Neil Barnfather, because he's back with Good Maps, a new mapping service, which from my mind anyway, is very, very exciting. Neil's going to tell us all about it. Stay right where you are. That's coming up in just a sec. I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to getting out and about again. It seems ages since I've gone on a train or a bus or gone somewhere that maybe is not very familiar to me. And when I do that, of course, I'm bringing my trusty mobile phone with my GPS app. Well, something new and very exciting has come on the scene called Good Maps. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by a familiar voice from the past. And that's Neil Barnfather, who's Vice President of Europe for Good Maps. Neil, I hope I got that correct, by the way. But welcome, first of all, to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Stuart. And absolutely, that's spot on.
Great, great stuff. Listen, great to have you. We are doing this on a Monday morning, so it's your first appointment of the week. Hope it's a nice way for you to start your week, by the way.
Very pleasant. Thank you ever so much. Okay, I'm delighted to be here.
Neil, we'll talk about Good Maps in a second, all the stuff it does and what you do and all that. But just, can we go back? Because I think you and I would have chatted way back in the day when we were both at different stages in our lives, and you had a hugely successful brand, I suppose, called TalkNav. Just tell us a little bit about what that did, because I think people might have fond memories of TalkNav and talks and all that stuff.
Sure, absolutely. It must take us back to about 2004 or so, the eve of the speaking phone, as it were. And back in the day, Talks was the first software that could be installed on Symbian handsets. And I remember, as a blind person myself, going from being able to see visually a screen on a phone and, you know, being able to use the contacts and texts and things like that. And then that gradually going, and I couldn't do that anymore. And I remember being incredibly excited when one of my friends said, "Oh, you know, they've got this software. You know, you can install it." And I tried it out, and I was elated. It was absolutely wonderful, as I'm sure many people had that eureka moment. But I felt genuinely that the process to which we as blind people were acquiring the software just wasn't especially friendly from the sort of, you know, on demand. We were moving into the whole dot-com bubble had, you know, come, and we were in the middle of that. And it just seemed to me that people should be able to buy the thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a manner and style that suited them. And TalkNav really was born from that. Now at this point in my life, I've started and created 19 businesses. Wow. TalkNav was one of those. And It really was, I suppose you'd call it a philanthropic venture. It was very much my way of giving something back to the community. And we did Talks, all the Nuance products. We did the Code Factory counterparts to that, Mobile Speak. Mm. And later people will probably remember Wayfinder Access, which was the sort of, you know, GPS, accessible GPS for the first real mobile phone space.
I remember distinctly you put a lovely piece on your website on TalkNav after the very untimely death of Thorsten Brand, who I guess was kind of the founder of all this stuff, and who I often think, Neil, if Thorsten hadn't done what he did, we wouldn't have the iPhone accessibility we have today. I firmly believe that. I don't think Apple would have done this on their own. They came up with stuff and they saw what was happening.
I think that's absolutely the case. And Thorsten himself was blind. And a wonderful character. I met him several times. Mm. And I felt really moved at his untimely passing, as you say. And there was an outpouring of grief from the community. There genuinely was, globally.
Yeah.
And we all wanted to do something, but it seemed we needed a galvanizing sort of place to do that. And Talknow just seemed the natural place to spawn that from. And we opened a condolence book, which I had hand calligraphy, let's say that properly, written up. So everyone was able to electronically put their entries, and then we had that written up in beautiful handwriting into an actual condolence book. And people were allowed the opportunity to donate to a memorial fund, and we doubled that as a company. And then that was given via Marcus Grober, who was the co-founder of Talks, to Torsten's family, along with the handwritten book, which was just a real privilege is probably the wrong word, but I felt very humble to be part of that process and hand that on to us as a community.
I just remember thinking at the time, you know, you'd created this lovely space. Reading some of those messages was really heartbreaking, because as you said, and I met Torsten a couple of times, one of the nicest guys, this very gentle German accent, very, very nice guy. So you'll always be linked with me for that, which I thought was a really great thing to do. But listen, time has moved on a long time ago, I suppose, when we think back to that. And you're now in the UK promoting Good Maps, and it's very exciting kind of potential to all this technology. And you and I were chatting about this last week. Tell us, first of all, a little bit about Good Maps, what it is, and kind of how it's come about.
Sure. So Good Maps has its roots from the American Printing House for the Blind. APH set about with a sort of challenge, if you will, to its internal teams to come up with a way of helping our community navigate within the indoor environment. You know, we're all very familiar with GPS. It's realistically, there's not a blind person who doesn't own a smartphone that doesn't have some combination of apps on their device. But there's that sort of euphemistic, you have arrived at your destination, that it spouts out as you sort of, you know, arrive at a building. But where's the door? And actually, the door wasn't my intended target. It's what lies beyond. So APH wanted to solve that. It was felt that technology had got to that point where we should be able to crack this. And it was indeed. They combined various technologies together, which we'll come back to in a moment. But in essence, once they realized they could do it, and they got that piece of the puzzle sort of together, it was realized very quickly, and I think with immense foresight, by the way, I really think APH deserve a lot of credit here, that the solution needed to be in outside, if you will, of the not-for-profit space. It needed to be, you know, nimble and very much more of a startup type atmosphere. And Good Maps was spawned from that. So Good Maps is, you know, separated from APH now. And its mission, though, very much still remains at its core. You know, if we can take blind people, which is an incredibly niche demographic, but nevertheless, if you look at it from the barriers and the challenges we face navigating indoors, if we can get a blind person from A to B indoors, we can realistically probably move anyone. And that was really the lynch for me personally becoming involved, the opportunity to combine my sort of corporate commercial acumen with my altruistic side. I really, really bought into their vision, no pun intended.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting when you talk about people who are involved, because one of the things, because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of these things around. There's a lot of mapping solutions. There's a lot of new technology in this wayfinding space coming along. But one of the things that struck me about Good Maps was when I saw that you were involved and I saw Mike May was involved. And I kind of said, if these two guys are involved, this thing must be good.
and I think, you know, that's absolutely true. Mike and I have a long-standing history together. We're very good friends. And I ironically wasn't aware he was working for the company until I approached the founder and said, you know, can I help you with the UK / European evolution of the service? But yeah, absolutely. I think it speaks volumes to the solution that you have the caliber of Mike May, myself, involved in the product. Mm-hmm. Not only how it's put together, but I suppose championing that as a product. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the technology that's powering this, and then we'll talk maybe a bit about the user experience, because there's two aspects, isn't there? There's the aspect from the perspective of of the customer who pays you a fee. So let's say that's a store or the airport or whatever. And then there's the end user who is like you and me who are using this on their phones. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So technologically wise, the real kind of difference, we've had indoor navigation for some time. It's just traditionally they sort of rely on either Bluetooth beacons, which are getting better. They are getting better, but it's realistically an old technology. You know, we've had Bluetooth positioning out for circa sort of 20 years or so. It's got better, but nevertheless, it has problems. Saturation of signal. So, you know, it works great when there's five or six people wandering around, but throw 100 people in all with mobile phones and things like that, and it starts to creak a little. But the big drawback on Bluetooth beaconing is the cost of the infrastructure. You know, you've got to, you know, go and put these things up. It doesn't matter if they're battery powered or mains powered. They're expensive. You just can't get away with it. They've got to maintain something. And that's a problem. So the Good Map solution doesn't use that sort of technology. The alternative really that's sort of been around for a few years now is this notion of putting QR code type solutions up. And the difficulty again with those is that they're location based as opposed to navigation, point to point navigation. So you know, yes, I can point my phone, and provided I'm in a range of one of these QR codes, it'll bing, you know, and tell me what that information is. So you know, this is the way to the elevators and it's 100 meters away or whatever the measurement is that it can do by way of accuracy at this many degrees. But if my destination wasn't the elevators and I was actually looking for the cafe, I don't have contextual information as to what. How do I get from knowing the elevators over there to the cafes over there? So the Good Maps solution works differently. What that does is we firstly send in a LiDAR backpack scanning device, which goes in. It does the LiDAR. LiDAR's had a lot of attention over the last few years. In essence, it's using light as opposed to sound. We're all familiar with radar. It uses light to measure to a very high degree of accuracy the space in a three-dimensional context around the person walking around wearing the backpack. But that's only half the magic really, because having a map doesn't really help us navigate the space. So the backpack also takes high resolution georeferenced images, and what we mean by that is we end up with an XYZ axis position from the image, and that's for every image taken. We then run that through machine learning, and the machine learning extrapolates all the key parts of the picture that are what you might consider, I suppose, geometric shapes. So right angles, flat planes, that sort of thing. We're not interested in, you know, computer screens and bits of paper or posters on the wall or anything like that. It's just literally those things. Those two things together are blended and they become your building's map. We overlay on top of that information about the rooms. So, you know, it might be conference rooms. It might be a specific description of a space. This is the canteen. This is, you know, platform two at a train station, you know, whatever it might be. And that detailed information can be as rich as you want. It could literally be, this is, you know, there's a water feature in reception. This is a water feature. But it might also be, this is a water feature commissioned by XYZ, installed on so-and-so date and unveiled by the president of the company. So you can really get to grips with these maps and really make them very detailed. And that's the technology that occurs at the deployment stage. It's very, very quick. You know, we can it takes as long as it takes to walk around the space to create the map. And then it takes probably 2 to 3 times that amount of time to actually put the 2D overlay on top of that and make it live. So a building can be live in a matter of literally a week, 2 weeks sort of thing. It's very quick, very efficient. Looking at the end user part of it, the end user, the likes of us carrying around our phones, we offer an iPhone and an Android app. They're free of charge. There's no download cost involved, and there's no subscription, etc. The expectation is that the building owner, the venue owner, would be the one paying for that service to be available for people. And what that does is, as you're walking around the space, we take extraordinarily low resolution images from your phone's camera. It's not a video feed, it's a still. It's taken periodically, and that's matched against the pictures we took in the original high resolution scan. That allows us then to correct for the drift that occurs in the natural sensors. So some apps that are out there rely on this sort of using the accelerometer, gyroscope and the compass in the phone. The problem is that you can get drift from those sensors, and you know, at the end of the day, they're tiny and they're being bumped around as you're walking. So the CPS piece, we call that camera-based positioning system, that fixes the drift. We take that still, we marry it up against the map, and we correct for the drift.
So is the phone, so when you're using this, the end user with their phone, then they have their phone in their hand and they're pointing the cameras, it's just taking these images as they're walking along. Would that be the use case?
That's the easiest way to imagine it. You're literally walking along and you'll be given either audio prompts via your own screen reader. We have a built-in voice synthesizer as well. And there's also a textual display for people who don't want speech. So, you know, because obviously this is more than just a solution for blind users.
So you're, for example, you're in the airport, let's just say, and the airport has been mapped and you want to find a particular cafe and you go up the escalator. Do you get guided? What kind of feedback will you get to bring you to the cafe?
Yes. You're literally, it's very much akin to walking around and in the outdoor environment with a sat nav that you're very familiar with. So the experience has been deliberately kept in line with what people are used to. So you'll be told to proceed forwards 50 yards, 40 meters, whatever it might be. And then if you're in a corridored environment, so something which is what you might call closed in, it's very much at the end of this passage, you know, turn left, that sort of idea. But if you're in more of an open concourse, we can give you a directional sense of, you know, straight ahead or, you know, travel to the right, etc. So and that process is constantly being evaluated based on those snapshots, those stills. So you'll be given both a bearing and a distance, which, provided you're heading the correct way, will be decreasing in terms of its distance.
So do you open Good Maps when you get indoors, or can you also use it outdoors to get you somewhere and then continue using it indoors?
Yeah, good question. Right. So Good Maps presently does outdoor location-based information. So that's street name, street number, announces points of interest that you're passing. And you can either use that from a locked, getting warmer location, say, you know, Starbucks or what have you. Other coffee shops are available. So it's very much a sort of blind square and other sort of apps experience that you'd be familiar with. And then indoors is obviously what we would call, as I say, the point-to-point navigation really kicks in, and that can either do the same point-to-point, as we've just discussed. It can do a getting warmer, so you can lock a location. And indeed, you can just use it for basic information as you're walking freely without a target in mind. What am I passing? And what you can do is you can combine the two use cases. So you may have just popped out of a train station, and you know you're going to your office or a meeting room in a nearby building that has been mapped. And you will then have the location-based information, which doesn't include, you know, navigational data, but nevertheless, it'll do a getting warmer to the building. And then when you go across the threshold into the building, you'll be then migrated over to the point-to-point within the building.
And is there a way of knowing, so for example, that scenario you used there, saying that you're coming out of the train station, you're going maybe to a meeting room. Is there a way of knowing on the app what areas near you are mapped already by Good Maps?
Yes. Within the app, there is a list of currently available indoor spaces. And it's actually quite neat. You can actually virtually explore them, which is a real heads up. I've never been to the States. I started working for the company, within pandemic times. So I haven't been able to go there. But I've been able to virtually explore the building. And it's literally the metaphorical person guiding you around the building. And you can really get an incredible understanding of the space before you go, which for our community, I really perceive as invaluable.
I love that idea because I do a lot of what I say to people is sort of virtual route navigation if it's somewhere I haven't been before. And that's just using the built-in Maps app on my phone and just sort of playing around before I go out and about. I'm thinking of your scenario there where you haven't been to this building in the States. You're presumably hoping to go when all this COVID is over. I wonder, when you go into the building, will you feel more straight away, feel more confident moving around it as a blind person? You probably will.
I think so. I think, honestly, I mean, I was astounded to be able to, as it were, you know, virtually set my location as our office building in Louisville and be able to move around that building, to be able to actually comprehend the spaces. Okay, well, you know, where's the nearest meeting room to our office? Where's the nearest toilets? That sort of thing. Mm. You know, the things that really are helpful and beneficial to understand, to conceptualize the space before you go, makes you feel more relaxed and definitely less tense, I would feel.
Yeah, and maybe a little less feeling that you kind of need to rely on people that you may not know very well. You know,
yes.
It's your first time visit this space and you're kind of there. I need to ask a question. I don't know whether I should. Can I ask for help now? Or, you know, is someone busy? I'm curious then to look at how all this happens. And I suppose what I mean by that is, how do organizations kind of get linked up with you guys? Or what are people, how is that process driven? And how are organizations responding? Because it strikes me, this is fantastic. You know, your airport, your train station, your shopping center, there's any number of places.
It starts becoming very intense when you start thinking about, my goodness, these locations and these. And just as you think you've sort of got it completely thought through, you suddenly think of another use case. So let's rewind slightly. So an organization can reach out directly to us, either via the website or indeed some people, you know, locate my information via a podcast such as this one, and, you know, we'll get in touch directly. We have points of presence in the US, in Canada, and obviously here in the UK and Ireland. So, you know, it doesn't really matter if you go via the website or not. We're obviously directly approaching what one might consider a target segment. So we're going to, as you said, the railway companies, we're going to healthcare settings and providers, we're going to academic locations, corporate venues, that sort of side of things, shopping malls. I honestly would say there's probably not very many locations where it's not suited and where it's not a sensible option.
What are organizations saying? Because it strikes me that for these guys, this could be really useful. Okay, not saying that they drop all their customer service staff, but if they can sort of, you know, shout about this and say, we have good maps in our building, it has to be good for them, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the real things that have been really surprising is, so the most responsive sector to date has been the corporate sector. I've been really impressed when one considers, you know, they're not, you know, state backed in any way. There's no government funding available. There's not some, you know, pot of money they can draw down on for inclusivity. I've been incredibly elated, frankly, at how well the corporate sector have responded. And one of the things I hear repeatedly is, you know, we have, you know, programs and processes in place to recruit a diverse workforce, but we realize very early on, well, how do we convey that, and how do we get people even into the building for their interviews, and how would I respond to a company when they say, hey, come to our building, your interview is going to be on the fourth floor? But how does it make you feel as a blind person, knowing that you're going to need a lot of support and assistance potentially in that space? Mm. And if they can enable this solution to make me feel more welcomed and more, you know, I suppose literally it's a statement, isn't it? It's a statement as to their inclusivity. So the corporate sector have been really, really positive. And we've had some good conversations in academia as well. It's really encouraging in those spaces.
Okay. And is there a way that maybe, is there a way that the community can get involved? So for example, if I'm in an airport or a train station or whatever, and hopefully again, we're all going to be traveling soon. And I said, God, it would be great if these guys had good maps. I mean, is there a way we can help the cause, or can we kind of push people towards the website, or is there a way you can maybe as a user nominate your favorite train station and then you guys will follow up with them?
That's really good. Yeah. So let's do this in reverse order. The nomination bit is a piece we're going to be implementing soon, where, you know, persons will be able to come forward and say, I would really like X location mapped. And then it will very much be that notion of, okay, we've got a location that we've had X many people interested in. Let's see if we can reach out to them, because that's a real, you know, it's a real testimonial, isn't it? To be able to say 30 people through your doors who are your regular users would really like this mapping. So it's it provides them some real valuable stakeholder engagement piece there. So the other route is the organizations themselves reaching out to us. And the most effective route absolutely is the ambassadorship of the community, being in that rower station, talking to staff, saying, you know, oh, I would have actually been able to do this myself and I wouldn't have needed sighted guide or some assistance were you to have had this. And it's just about understanding. We are very open to talking to any organization, and they literally just need to reach out. Most of these large entities, whether they're train operating companies, healthcare providers, etc., have inclusion and diversity officers at varying levels of rank within their organization. And it's just about getting that message to them. I would absolutely encourage, especially anyone from our community who knows the right people in those inclusion and sort of diversity equality roles, to really reach out and say, feel free to get in touch. It costs nothing to spend 20 minutes just exploring it.
Just explore it. Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't really want to get too much into price, because I'm sure it's going to be different for every space and every building. But do you guys operate on a subscription model? So if somebody signs up, for example, they're going to map the train station, is there kind of a yearly charge then, or how does that kind of work?
Absolutely. Good question. Right. So the fees calculated into two parts. There's a deployment cost, which obviously is a one-off, which is literally us sending in the team, mapping and producing the overall digital map of the space. Then there is an annual service fee. That's, you know, it's an annual commit. The longer you go, though, the greater the discount. So some of the academic organizations particularly have been after free and more year contracts so that they can budget for it and they can allow for it. The pricing model itself is literally based on a square foot or square meter basis. So it's economy of scale. The bigger the premise, or the more spaces you have. So, you know, you could have one building that's 1 million square foot, and you may have 100,000 square foot buildings. So it's prejudiced a little bit in the favor of the bigger spaces. It's just because obviously there is it's cost of doing 10 separate buildings instead of one. But at the end of the day, it's all economy of scale. So but the pricing model itself is based on square foot, square meters.
Okay. And just I'm kind of just trying to visualize these guys. Do you have guys literally in the UK walking around with these rucksacks on their backs and mapping this thing? This is great.
You do. And I was absolutely delighted to be able to get my hands on this and understand it. And I had this vision of, like, you know, something much smaller and sort of, you know, compact. And it's for anyone who had the site in the days to see it, this literally looks like something out of the Ghostbusters. It's quite sizable. It has a camera mount that stands proud about, you know, 2 or 3 foot up over the top of the wearer's head. So, you know, you are very obvious, and you know, we get a lot of sideward stares, so I'm told. But we have people in the UK doing this.
And I presume when those guys go into a room, are they kind of looking for, like, I mean, are they going to come back to you and go, Neil, this is going to be an easy one, or this one's tricky because I've noticed X, Y, and Z? Are they looking for certain things when they're going around the building?
Generally not. There's because of the range that the LiDAR itself has, corridors versus, you know, I suppose, you know, a larger open expanse of space in like a concourse or something, generally don't cause us too much trouble. People don't even cause difficulties because they get, for want of a better phrase, they get erased in the machine learning process. We're only interested in those right angles, those flat planes. We're not fussed about, hey, we need to be in this building at midnight or something like that. So no, I mean, there isn't generally, every building is different and every building presents unique, you know, complexities. But in general, no, there hasn't been any sort of like, oh my goodness, this is going to be a real headache. Sometimes the mapping is a bit more complex if you get buildings with mezzanine floors, or, you know, where the access route may be, you know, you have to go from the second floor down to the first and then back upstairs at the back of the building to the second floor because there's some great big wall. But, you know, once that's been mapped and allowed for, it's done.
I'm conscious I'm kind of asking you to glimpse into the future a little bit with this next question, but I'm just curious, are you guys thinking of, because I'm kind of thinking, if there was a set of smart glasses that could interface with this, that you're walking along with your cane or your dog, and maybe you're carrying something else, that the glasses that you're wearing could be taking the pictures and feeding back those photos to the mapping system without you having to hold your phone. Is that something you see in the future?
I suppose it's something that we certainly wouldn't say no to. today, from our solution at the moment as it stands, is incredibly battery efficient because we're not taking a video feed. We're just taking those stills. The battery drain is incredibly prorated in our favor, you might say, over solutions like that. My concern immediately would be, you know, we're introducing something then that has a limited capacity on battery, and how might that factor? But it's certainly something that I suppose it would be remiss of me not to say we'd explore it. I think the more attractive options into the future would surround, do we always need CPS? If you consider a sort of pyramid of accuracy, our CPS solution gives you, in optimum conditions, sort of sub 1 meter level of accuracy, which is incredible. But what if you don't need that level of accuracy? What if you're in a space where you think, actually, I can go down a bit? Do we need CPS at that point? Can we manage with technologies, additional levels of technology, which might allow us to move around in the space, keeping the phone in our pocket, for example?
Yeah.
What would that look like? And that's probably an area where we would be more inclined to focus on. So you have that, you know, I need that razor sharp level of accuracy. Whip your phone out, use the CPS. But actually, I'm pretty comfortable here just mooching around. I'm in a hospital, perhaps, where there's lots of, you know, relatively narrow corridors, and all I need is a at the next junction, turn left type prompt. And I'll use my cane and my guide dog to do the more accurate part of that piece.
Yeah, okay. It's all very exciting stuff, Neil. I'm really actually want to try it out. So speaking of which, if there's people who are listening dying to get their hands on the app, is that available now for download or in this part of the world?
Absolutely. So both on the Apple App Store and the Android Play Store, you can type in Good Maps Explore. Good Maps is one word, not two, and Explore does not have an R on the end. We're not Explorer, rather Explore. And yes, it's available, it's free of charge. Regarding the virtual buildings, today we have no public spaces. This is an option that venues have when they make their space digitalized. They get a choice, and regrettably, owing to obviously the majority of our clientele are corporate at the moment in the UK, they have opted that they only want those maps to be available in that context. So they don't appear in the public spaces where you can virtually position yourself, which is,
yes.
But you can go and have a look at some of the US locations and things like that and see the kind of idea of what's there.
Okay. And of course, hopefully, as we come out of COVID and as people start traveling and as people start to request, I'm sure, from you guys and via their favorite, whatever it is, train station or airport or shopping center, that these guys might contact you. That's presumably the hope.
Absolutely. And we do have several public spaces that are probably 80, 90% of the way through the purchasing and mapping process as we speak. So I would envisage that before, you know, the end of June, maybe early July, we will have publicly available locations that can be visited in the United Kingdom and Ireland that are available to actually go visit and go and try the solution. So perfectly in time for lockdown easing.
Good. Excellent. We're all going to be out and about soon. Neil, just before we let you go, how can people, if people want to know more, look at your website, or if they want to get in touch, how can they do that?
Absolutely. So as I say, goodmaps.com, all one word, no hyphen, etc. And they can also get in touch directly with me by emailing neil.barnfather@goodmaps.com.
All right, Neil, delighted to catch up with you. I'm delighted that you're kind of back in the community. I know you never left the community, but I'm delighted that you're back doing, I suppose, what you do best. So thank you very much for joining us today. Best of luck with Good Maps, and we're looking forward to testing it out very soon.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Many thanks to Neil Barnfather there. Thoroughly enjoyed catching up with Neil. We recorded that interview about 10 days ago, I think, as I said at the start there, early on a Monday morning. What a great way to start the week and to chat to somebody who's so impassioned about this kind of stuff. I think that's what I definitely hear when I chat to Neil. Check it out, Good Maps Explore on the App Store, and see what you think. That's just about all for this edition, but we're back soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound Technology, stay safe and stay well, and take care. Thanks for listening.